Hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rouleau.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. This program gets behind the environmental, social, political, educational, spiritual, and health decisions that affect our lives and futures, yet are not always determined by us, but rather by politics, business, and other self-interest groups. Investigative in nature, we go where mainstream stops. As a leader in the healthcare and patient safety world, I now expose current and relevant harms and charms that either endanger or improve our health, our freedom, our privacy, and our sanity. Most of us simply don't have time to pay attention to decisions that are being made on our behalf, decisions made by people who may have less than altruistic motives. And often we don't speak up because we are not aware. Well, this program changes that by being the voice for informed choice. I am your hostess, Pat Rouleau. So happy that we're together once again. And as usual, I have lots to share today. So let's get started, shall we?
Hello? Someone? Nurse? Can someone help? Hello?
Can someone help? Stop the noise!
Nurse?
Hello, we're going crazy in here!
This is an alarming problem. Did you know that there was such a list as the Health Technology Hazard List? I didn't either. The Emergency Care Research Institute, ECRI, a Pennsylvania-based patient safety organization institute, released its top 10 health technology hazards and listed hospital alarm hazards as the number one issue on its annual list of the top 10 health technology dangers. With alarm hazards topping the list, the ECRI points out that excessive numbers of alarms lead to fatigue and ultimately patient harm. 19 out of 20 hospitals surveyed ranked alarm fatigue as a top patient safety concern. Alarm fatigue occurs when clinicians become desensitized to the constant noise of alarms or overwhelmed by the sounds and turn the alarms down or turn them off. Approximately 80% of alarms that go off have no clinical relevance. Imagine that. Hospital staff are exposed to an average of 350 alarms per bed per day, based on a sample from an intensive care unit at the Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. That translates into thousands of alarms per unit and tens of thousands of alarms per hospital each and every day. Can you imagine working in that kind of noise-filled, stressful environment? God bless nurses and their staff. I can't concentrate if the person next to me is chewing gum. Complicating the situation is the abundance of technology with no standardization for what the beeps mean, misinterpreting alarm signals, too few staffers to respond to alarms, and equipment malfunctions. And cases of patient harm caused by noise fatigue are probably vastly underreported, partly because ignoring or misinterpreting an alarm may have set off a chain of events that led to an injury or a death, such as due to patient falls, delays in treatment, and medication errors. For example, a 17-year-old died recently following a tonsillectomy at a Pennsylvania surgery center. After the surgery, the high school junior was given a potent painkiller that slowed her breathing. By the time the nurses checked on her 25 minutes later, she had suffered profound and irreversible brain injury. She died 15 days later. A nurse said in her deposition that the alarm on the respiratory monitor was muted. In another case, an elderly woman's heart rate monitor beeped unnoticed by staff for several minutes. Her nurse was preparing medications in another room where she could not hear or see the patient in the monitoring room. And by the way, the hospital had cut the position of the technician whose job was to monitor alarms at a central station. So by the time the nurse responded, the patient had suffered, again, irreversible damage and died shortly afterward. And just as a side comment from me, this doesn't sound like an alarm problem, but rather a staff shortage problem. How was that nurse expected to care for one patient and attend to an alarm that couldn't be heard? And yet in another case, cardiac electrodes became disconnected from a patient who fell getting out of bed, triggering a specific alarm that usually indicates that the wires are not connected. Medical workers discounted it because it was considered a low priority. No one responded until housekeeping staff discovered the patient on the floor 30 minutes later. And then, by that time, clinicians were unable to resuscitate the patient. So what's being done? The Joint Commission, a group that accredits hospitals, is requiring hospitals to identify the alarms that pose the biggest safety risks by unnecessarily adding noise or being ignored. Hospitals must decide who has the authority to turn off alarms. Sounds very strange to me. In some hospitals' non-intensive care areas, officials have been implementing what's called a no-pass policy, meaning that no employees, from housekeepers to administrators, should pass by a patient's room if they hear an alarm. And that takes me back to the days in the hospital with my mom. Sometimes those alarms would beep forever. Nurses and aides would walk by and keep on walking. Hello, can you turn this thing off? We're going crazy in here, and my mom can't sleep. In fact, a recent study from the University of Chicago found that average noise levels in a hospital room easily exceeded the 30 decibels recommended by the World Health Organization, and that peak noise levels sometimes approached the level of a chainsaw. Not surprisingly, patients in the loudest rooms suffered the most, losing as much as an hour or more of sleep a night compared to those in the quieter rooms. And for every hour of sleep lost, the patient's blood pressure increased by as much as 6 points. A study published more recently looked at the brain wave and cardiac responses to isolated hospital sounds, like an ice machine dispensing its ice cubes, or a laundry cart rolling, an IV pump beeping, people talking in the hallways, pagers. And then they calculated just how disruptive those sounds were to patients who were asleep. The researchers found that while the responses differed depending on the stage of sleep, people were more consistently aroused by the electronic alarms from monitors and infusion devices and the ringing from telephones. Each time they woke, their heart rates jumped. And then this takes me to another obstacle in the quest for quiet. It's not the machines sometimes, but rather the approach to patient care in many hospitals. Doctors, nurses, and other members of the hospital staff often wake patients up in the middle of the night or during the afternoon nap to assess a non-urgent blood pressure or temperature or draw blood or administer medications that could actually be safely done and delayed by a couple of hours. Sometimes, and in some places, it seems that everyone in the hospital tends to do things at their own convenience instead of working together as a team to figure out what might be the best for the patient. Yes, I know it's not a hotel. However, my mom endured many instances when she was awakened at 3 a.m. to give her a bath to save time for the incoming morning staff who likely were going to be understaffed, or so I was told. Well, I don't claim to have the answer to this, but as a patient or as an advocate for someone in the hospital, be aware of noise pollution and noise fatigue, especially when it comes to alarms. Ask what can be done to reduce the amount of alarms in your room. Ask for an explanation of the alarms in your room. Most patients don't know that a one-beep alarm is not typically as urgent as those with 3 tones or 3 beeps. Ask the staff to group non-life and death actions such as bathing and blood draws into a single visit and not in the middle of the night. The quieter your environment, the better your outcome with fewer complications. Now, that's just a small solution that should not be alarming.
We're going crazy in here!
Right now, it's time for our weekly author spotlight, a favorite segment of the program where I tease you with a sneak peek into a recent author interview. If you love to read, you'll find plenty of fresh and fabulous authors at our very own radio network, speakuptalkradio.com. So take a listen, then head to the website to hear the entire 30-minute interview. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. So let's take a listen. Thank you. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Now, if you've ever asked these questions, where do I start with fitness and fat loss? Where can I find honest fitness and weight loss advice that works? You are in the right place because right now I have a fitness coach turned fitness author with me. He is James Atkinson. Known to his readers and friends as Jim, he is from the UK and has helped thousands of people change their lives through his fitness books. He has been in the fitness game for well over 20 years, achieving some impressive fitness goals from fat loss and general fitness to long distance running and endurance training all the way to bodybuilding competition. Jim has also served a number of years in the British Army as an airborne soldier in the Unit 9 Parachute Squadron Royal Engineers. He has written 6 fitness books that have achieved bestseller status on Amazon, and he loves to help the beginner to fitness take all of those important steps in the right direction. He is also noted to say, "I'd love to be with you at the start of your fitness journey, be by your side when you cross the finish line, and be the first to congratulate you on your achievements." He also makes a point of writing and advising from his personal experience with no gimmicks or fads. It's all honest and real advice that works. And I know we can all use a boost when it comes to improving our fitness. So welcome to the network, Jim.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. And I have to make a confession to you. What attracted me to you the most was your bloopers video on your website.
Okay, it wasn't my stunning good looks then.
I tell you what, it was awesome. It was filled with your head shaking and expletives. And I thought, you know what? There's nothing like sharing honesty and foolishness with strangers whom you're trying to get to do business with you. So I had extreme respect for you for that.
Oh, that's excellent. That is because one of the things I thought when I got the invite was, oh, she mustn't have seen that video because it was terrible, you know?
Oh, no, that's what I liked most about you so far. So that just tells you who you're talking to today, right?
Yeah, great.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now, you say, "I am a normal guy who has average at best genetics and below average when it comes to academic prowess. So I would like to inspire anyone who thinks that they can't to want to take steps in believing that they can." And you say that, "I believe my personal fitness journey has been the deciding factor that has made me believe that I can." So why don't you begin today by sharing your journey with us?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Well, when I was young, I was never really blessed with genetics, as I've already said, and I was never athletic, and you know, I'd always want to be better than I was, and it was a shame really, because I always liked watching the rugby on the TV, and I always wanted to be just like Arnold, you know, big superhero, but I never could be. So when I first started getting into fitness to build up muscles, basically, and yeah, everything I've learned from there has been a transferable skill, I would say, into everything else that I've done, because it wasn't easy, and I won't say it's easy for anyone who's starting on their fitness journey, but one of the biggest takeaways from my experience was that whenever you get knocked down or you come to a challenge, you just have to keep going forward and going forward again, and eventually you will get those results. And that's pretty much what I did. I mean, I was, I've never been good at anything, but eventually I got good at something, and that was fitness, and that was the first thing that I actually excelled in the end.
That's actually a life lesson. I mean, not just fitness, but anything that you want to become good at or something you work hard at, eventually you can accomplish it. So I think it's very inspiring as well. You say that your target audience is for someone that has never had a real fitness results. And your first book, The Fitness and Exercise Motivation Book, is the place to start. So why don't you tell us about that book?
Most people, when they say, you know, "Oh, I want to lose some weight, lose a few pounds, or I want to run a marathon, or even get into bodybuilding or something like that, or just generally lose weight and become fit, the first thing they'll do is go to the gym, you know, or go for a run. But the way I look at things is that if you're going to go on a journey, you have to know where you're going. You don't just get in your car and just drive aimlessly. You'll say, oh, I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to, you know, drive to the gym, let's say. You know that that's your destination. So what you really need to do is have a destination in mind when it comes to your fitness journey. So rather than just going out for a run, deciding that you want to lose a bit of extra few pounds and going for a run, you'll say, right, I'm going to go for a run as the fifth thing that I'm going to, the fifth step of my journey. And the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to plan and get a mindset, get a destination, and then work through it that way. And most people miss out this fundamental foundation of the planning and the mindset, because fitness, to me, and I know this is true because I've been there, is 90% a mental struggle and 10% a physical struggle. And it's keeping up with it, keeping up consistency over time and making the small changes and making sure you stick to your path and your journey and going for the right destination. So that's what this book's all about, my fitness and exercise motivation. And it's to build the solid foundation that everybody needs to get their great fitness results.
And it's that focus on mindset and building a solid foundation that ensures fitness success that most people skip. Or as you're speaking, I think people just aren't aware of that. They do exactly what you said. I'm going to lose a couple pounds. They start running around and go to the gym. But what's the goal? And it's like anything, if building a house, you have to have a foundation. So your book helps with that.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like, for instance, if I'd sat on the sofa for 30 years, I didn't know anything about fitness. This is why I always say this, and I think it's a great analogy. And I always say that if I'd sat on the sofa for 30 years, done absolutely nothing, but I know what I know now, I would start with the information in this book, and then I would head off after that, and I'd know exactly what to do after that. So, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Here's a million-dollar question. Why is it so difficult for people to begin a fitness program and, secondly, to stick with it? We talked about mindset, but how do we get that mindset?
This is the thing. It's I think straight away one of the biggest things that people lack is being positive. I've known people all my life, and I'm sure you do, and everyone else that's listening to this will know someone that they speak to, and everything they say is negative, negative. Mm-hmm. And with that kind of attitude, how are you ever supposed to be positive, you know? And being positive is a major part of a fitness journey and getting fitness results. So I would always say, from the start, work on your positivity. And one of the things I have in the book is actually, I've made a chart in there, and And one of the things in there is to say, this week I have had these five positive experiences. And even if you've had a terrible week, there's always something you can always find a positive in that terrible week. And I think that is probably the first thing you need to do. I mean, a lot of people might think, I've got nothing to do with fitness. But I can tell you that has. If you can get a positive mindset and you can work on that and build it, you will start to build mental robustness, which also will carry you through and help you when it is hard to get out in the rain and go for your cardio or something like that. You know, that's just an example.
So you're saying that positivity in all aspects of our life, if we can improve the way we look at things and come up with a more positive outlook, that will obviously then translate and help us with our fitness program?
Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that, yeah. And like I said before, everything that I've had, like I've written six fitness books, and that was all because without my experience in the fitness world, I truly believe that I wouldn't have been able to sit down, focus, and write a single book, let alone six. Mm. I truly think that's one of the big fundamentals that you need to work on.
Well then, as we begin to wrap up, we want to send folks to your website, gymshealthandmuscle.com. Any final words of advice before we say goodbye?
If you want to start fitness, get a goal and get a plan and stick with it. And if you ever need any help, give me a shout and drop me an email, jim@jimshealthandmuscle.com, and I'm always happy to help out if you get stuck with anything. I'll help out where I can.
Well, good. We appreciate that. jimshealthandmuscle.com. Jim, what a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much for sharing you and all of your tips with us. I hope that everyone listening gets a little bit more fit after today's program.
Thanks for the invite as well.
I hope you enjoyed today's featured author. And to listen to the entire interview, head over to speakuptalkradio.com, where you'll find not only today's author, but over 100 additional writers with plenty of quality books to share with you. That's speakuptalkradio.com. You are listening to Speak Up Talk Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy that you're with me today, because in a few moments, we are going to go back to our roots and play one of our most requested games, Shocking News from Around the World, just to lighten the mood a little bit today. But before I go light, I'm going back to the dark. We talked about alarming problems at the top of the show, and that would be how noise and alarms affect a hospital patient. Well, another alarming problem that continues to be a challenge is MRSA, M-R-S-A, and I want to talk just for a moment about MRSA and what we can do to help keep it at bay. MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It is a bacterium that is resistant to antibiotics, and most people get this infection from a hospital or a clinic environment, and in fact, hospitals are where the superbug emerged. MRSA was first discovered in the UK in 1961 and then in the United States in 1981, and it became international news in the late 90s. So what was a fairly common and benign bacteria, Staphylococcus aureus, has now developed into a monster, largely through the development of antibiotics and antibacterial agents that are used in the hospital. It's no longer now confined to hospitals, so you'll now hear of community-acquired MRSA as opposed to just hospital or healthcare-acquired MRSA. It's out in the community. And once a person acquires this bug, it remains with them for life because there is no effective pharmaceutical treatment for MRSA infections. So what are the symptoms? Well, it depends on where the infection appears. It typically appears as a skin infection, such as a boil or an abscess that just doesn't seem to go away or heal. It could also enter via surgical cuts or wounds and will often be red, swollen, filled with pus, and painful. And often it's mistaken for spider bites, although I'm not sure where all of these spiders are supposed to be coming from in a hospital. A MRSA infection can lead to what is known as cellulitis, and this is where the infection spreads to the deeper levels of skin tissue and fat, and the skin around the infection will turn red, hot, swollen, and painful. And if it infects the lungs, it can lead to pneumonia. Those symptoms will be shortness of breath, chills, a worsening fever, and cough. And again, like a skin infection, it doesn't appear to go away. And in time, a MRSA infection can lead to more serious and even fatal conditions such as urinary tract infections, blood poisoning, osteomyelitis, and even infection of the inner lining of the heart, which is called endocarditis. So not good outcomes, right? Well, I want to talk about essential oils because, as you know, I've been offering those for a little over a year now, specifically to deal with hospital situations and healthcare situations. Yes, they do smell good, but they are also a likely way of fighting superbugs, For one, they don't have the side effects that most antibiotics do. And secondly, they're not capable of producing resistant strains of bacteria in the same way that pharmaceuticals do. And there's a reason for that, because first, essential oils are quite complex in their makeup, made of hundreds of compounds, as opposed to a couple of key ingredients in a medicine that's produced in a lab. And secondly, while every batch of pharmaceutical drug is the same, no essential oil is ever twice the same. And these two factors make it impossible for bacteria to mount an effective resistance to essential oils. Now, sometimes staph or MRSA may not respond to a single oil, so it's best to try another type of oil or move to a blended oil. Blends combine the benefits of several different essential oils into a single, easy-to-use mixture. Blends can also provide secondary benefits such as tissue healing and enhanced immune response properties. And so we have created what's called Be Gone MRSA Oil, and you can find that at the website tinydropseo.com. E stands for essential, O stands for oil. tinydropseo.com, and it's called Be Gone. We offer a MRSA oil that can offer superior results over single oils because the combination creates an even more complex and basically a broad spectrum support against infections. So which essential oils are best? Well, tea tree for one. It's a high quality oil that contains over 100 unique chemical constituents and has been the focus of many studies, articles, and medical uses, and is considered a safe alternative to drug therapies for treating MRSA skin infections. And if you would like to see some of those studies, head over to the website tinydropseo.com. On the right-hand side, there is a link to our MRSA page with many studies that you'll find to corroborate what it is that I'm saying. Eucalyptus and clove bud oil have also been shown to have positive impact on the MRSA bacterium. Lemongrass, a study carried out through Weber State University in Utah, found that 91 essential oils tested, 78 showed activity against MRSA, and one of the most effective ones was lemongrass. Now, MRSA is not an airborne pathogen. It spreads through physical contact. So here's a hint. If you're visiting or spending time in the hospital, you can rub some lemongrass on your hands and the soles of your feet. And if you do have a MRSA infection, you can apply lemongrass topically at the site of infection. Or you can simply use our blend called Be Gone MRSA Oil. So how can you use that for infection support? Direct skin application. The Tiny Drops Be Gone MRSA oil can be applied to skin cuts and scrapes as a preventive or on boils, abscesses, infected surgical site, and wounds as a treatment. You can inhale the Tiny Drops Be Gone MRSA oil. You can add the Tiny Drops Be Gone MRSA oil to your bath water or wound rinses or as an air diffuser. After washing your hands with soap and water, you can spray your Tiny Drops Be Gone MRSA spray. That's right, we have it also in a spray. And you can spray that directly on your hands and then rub briskly. So there's many ways that you can use our Tiny Drops Be Gone MRSA oil and Be Gone MRSA spray. And you can find all of this information at the tinydropseo.com website. MRSA is a problem in the hospital. MRSA is a problem in nursing homes, in rehabilitation homes, and as I mentioned previously, out in the community. So just get yourself a bottle of essential oil, the 10-millimeter bottle. It's $9.99. We have the 2-ounce spray bottle. It's $8.99. So again, I encourage you to pay attention to MRSA, its symptoms, and the problems it can cause in any kind of a healthcare facility. Prior to that, visit tinydropseo.com. That's tinydropseo.com, or you can call me and order by phone, 440-725-5462. That is 440-725-5462. The pharmaceutical industry is wreaking havoc on our health. Drugs promoted on TV and magazines. Drugs, drugs, drugs. I'm Pat Rulo with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Essential oils are powerful and concentrated plant essences, and just one tiny drop can have noticeable health benefits. No pills and no nasty side effects. Take charge of your health. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com. All right, guys, are you ready once again to play the most requested radio game of all time?
Go for it.
Let's do it.
All right. And what is the game, Bob?
shocking news from around the world.
All right, here's how it goes. I will read a health-related statement of sorts, and you guys have to decide if it's true, as we call it a shock.
Wow!
Or is it false? We call it a crock.
Oh!
All right, here's the shocking news number one. People with positive initials, ones that spell out things like J-O-Y or W-O-W, like William Otis Wadsworth, live nearly 4.5 years longer than people with neutral initials. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say it's a shock just because it just sounds like a shock.
I don't know. That just seems like more of an effect than that should have, thinking logically. So I'll say crock.
All right. You should never think logically because it is a shock.
Wow.
It must be the constant subliminal suggestion factor. And statistics. I can't talk. And statistics show that, for example, David Ulysses Davenport. What's his initials?
Dud.
Yep. Or what about this one? Alexis Susan Smith.
Oh, can we say that on the air?
Can we say that on the air? All right. If you have those kind of initials, you live nearly 3 years less.
Wow.
Yeah. Other initials that may shorten your life are I-L-L, D-E-D. Are we all safe here? Do your initials spell anything weird, Eric?
No, mine are neutral.
Okay, mine are too. Good. We're all right. All right, folks. This was very informative. Here's a shocking news number two. After analyzing 51 public restrooms, experts found that the stall the farthest away from the restroom door consistently had the lowest bacteria levels and the most toilet paper. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
That is a crock. I think the one that would be the least would be the first stall on the right.
I'm going to say crock for a different reason. I've heard it's the one in the middle that has the least.
Okay. You're both right. It is a crock.
Oh.
And it is the first stall.
Oh.
No one wants to take that one. The first stall probably sees less traffic because it's near the door and people want privacy. And here's a tip. When you're finished, stand before you flush. You guys don't have to worry about that because you're already standing. But ladies, when toilets are flushed, a fine mist of water containing contagious bacteria sprays up and you can catch intestinal bugs and hepatitis from it.
That's scary.
Wow.
All right, stand up when you flush. That's the takeaway.
It's called stand and flush.
I bet some people don't flush.
Okay. I've seen that too.
So I think we all have. Oh my gosh, here's the shocking news number three. Research suggests there's a marked difference between how younger and older people interpret misplacing their car keys. A young guy usually blames it on someone else and says, "Who took my darn keys?" And an old man typically blames it on himself. "I must be getting old. I misplaced my keys again." Is there a difference as to if you're going to feel younger or older based on that? Is that a shock or is that a crock?
I'm going to say it's a shock. I feel that way sometimes.
I'm going to say shock, but I would say that in my personal experience, it's different because anytime I've misplaced my keys, even though I'm not that old, I've been like, oh, I must be having a senior moment.
Well, don't do that because this is a shock. The moral of the story is never use your age as an excuse for anything like this.
Wow.
And because it feeds your mind those
Bad
thoughts.
Energy.
Yeah, yeah. And see if you don't remain younger longer. It's an effective mental trick.
All right. I'm going to blame everyone blame everyone but myself whenever I make a mistake like that.
Exactly. Blame the naked mole rat plushie in your home, right?
You got it.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Then they'll call you crazy. Here's the shocking news number four. To quickly bring down a fever over 102 degrees, put an ice pack under your arm or near your groin. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
It'd be a little cold in the groin area, Eric. I'm going to say a shock.
I'm just wondering, this isn't just like this actually reduces the fever. It doesn't just artificially lower the temperature on the thermometer.
No.
You're trying to trick the brain again, Eric.
Okay, I'll just say shock.
All right, it is a shock, guys.
Wow.
Icing either spot will cool your body's core. Now, it's uncomfortable.
I could say it would be.
But it works fast. And then see your doctor. Now, this kind of reminds me of someone I know who used Icy Hot for a sore neck, forgot to wash their hands.
Yeah, that was me. You don't have to say any more. And guess what? I scratched. And guess what I burnt? She would have to bring that up. You would have to bring that up, wouldn't you?
You finished it, and I wasn't going to say it was you.
You knew it was.
And now, so does everyone else.
Okay.
So I didn't know. I wouldn't have known.
See, Bob?
Well, that's what happens.
Told on yourself. Oh, gosh. All right, you guys, this is the final shocking news.
You got another one?
My last one. To lower your risk of heart attack and stroke, get a dog. Numerous studies show that petting a dog keeps blood pressure under control when you're stressed. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say it's a shock. I think you need a pet. I think it's a shock because I think a pet does bring it down. It takes care of the stress.
Yeah, I think I've heard about something like this with like pets in general. So I'll say shock.
Okay. You're right. It is true. It's a shock.
Wow.
But I wonder, does it have to be a dog?
It could be a cat.
Could be a cat?
Yeah, I'm more of a cat person.
Yeah. Or could it be perhaps be...
What? The mole rat.
The naked mole rat?
Naked mole rat!
Yeah.
Eric, you're going to have to bring your naked mole rat plushie to work. You think that'll... We can all pet the...
It's not going to feel like the way an actual naked mole rat would, though. It's not made out of, like, you know, skin.
Oh.
Which is a good thing.
I think it is a good thing. Oh, gosh. You guys, you're so fun, you guys.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, we learned about positive and negative initials, bathroom stalls and toilet spray, using your age as an excuse, ice packs and groins, and petting a naked mole rat plushie to avoid a stroke. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
All right, guys.
You did good.
And that's a wrap, Eric. Well, there you have it. A little bit of crazy. We like to do that every now and then. And a whole lot of serious. And we'll have more of it next week. So I hope you come back. Same time, same place. But you know me. Never the same information. And until then, visit our websites, tinydropseo.com, and get yourself some MRSA oil and spray or some other solutions to healthcare situations. Visit speakupandstayalive.com. as well as speakuptalkradio.com. So that gives you lots to do this week until we meet again. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice.